Hi everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fireline, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fireline, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today. Good morning, everyone. It's Bobby from BobbyOnFire.com. And today I'm here with my friends Ann.
Good morning.
And John.
Good morning, Bobby.
And Reva could not be with us today, but I think she's going to try to make these recordings more often. But she's not. She's a busy fire chief, so she's got fires in her part of the world right now. So anyway. Because it's fire season out west and there's lots of firefighters out and sleeping and being taken care of out there on the ground, I thought I would talk a little bit for those non-fire people what it's like to sleep. Where do you sleep when you go on these big fires? And so I'm going to describe a little bit of that. Now, how we take care of the firefighters in fire camp is really pretty critical, because imagine you've got a fire that might have 1,000 firefighters assigned to it, or maybe 300, or maybe 1,500. You've got to feed them. You've got to provide places for them to shower. You've got to provide laundry services, like how do they take care of, how do they get clean laundry, all that sort of thing. But I'm going to talk about how people sleep. And depending on who your employer is and where you live, those situations, those conditions might be different. Now, the first kind of sleeping arrangement I want to mention is if you are a California firefighter working for a fire department or the state, you don't have to sleep on the ground. You don't have to sleep on a tent. They have a union contract that says they get to sleep in a bed, which is a wonderful thing. And they either bring in big sleeping trailers, or they rent every motel room within 50 miles of the fire camp. And so if you're a California state firefighter or a municipal within the state of California, typically, most often, you don't have to sleep on the ground. Now, being a federal firefighter most of my career, I was a state and a fire department employee, but not in California. In California, I was a fed. So there were some times where I just needed to get off the ground. I just needed to sleep in a bed after, on some summers, you might be sleeping on the ground 50, 60 nights. And that wears on you. And if it starts getting cold, and I would start to feel like I had a sore throat coming on. So I would go find, if it was a Cal Fire, if it was a California fire, I would go find what they called the motel manager. They actually have a position on the fire called motel manager. And maybe I knew the motel manager from my time working in California. And I'd say, hey, I really could use sleep on a bed for a night or two. Can you get me a room? And oftentimes they would find you a room. But you kind of have to be nice about it and not make a lot of noise, because they're not supposed to let a fed sleep in a bed. One time I pulled up at a California state fire, it was a municipal fire, and it was only a few federal employees there. It was almost all state and local government municipals. And so I'm checking in, okay. Go find operations. I was a division supervisor. Go find operations, and they'll tell you what your assignment is. Oh, and the federal sleeping area. Now we're in this parking lot, this huge parking lot that's like of a convention center kind of a parking lot. So you can imagine there's some medians with grass strips about 6 feet wide, and there's trees planted every so often in the midst of this giant parking lot. And the parking lot's got fire engines and catering trucks and water trucks, and it's just busy, busy, busy. Oh, the federal sleeping area, it's under those trees along in that median. So this grass strip about 6 feet wide, that's where the feds were supposed to sleep. And I looked at some of the folks that were with me, and I was like, yeah, no, we're not sleeping there. You know, we're gonna get motel rooms, because everybody else is sleeping in a motel room. It's like they're gonna treat the feds like we're a bunch of cattle. Here, go sit on that grass strip in the middle of the parking lot. So that's where we're gonna sleep. Yeah. Anyway, so I was able to sweet talk a couple motel rooms from the motel manager. But that's California, and that's only selected fires in California. So one of the other things that they have is these sleeping trailers. Now imagine a big semi trailer shows up, and that semi trailer looks like every one of those semi trailers going down the road. Except if you walk in the door, there's like a regular door walking into it. You walk in, and it's like a train car in that it's like a little narrow walkway going down the middle of that trailer. And then on each side, there's bunks. But the bunks are four high. So if you imagine that the first bunk is almost on the floor, the second bunk is up, you know, maybe 2 feet, I don't know, not very much. There's enough room to put four bunks on either side. And you walk back that aisle away, there's another four bunks on either side. So I don't remember how many they can sleep. But when there's been sleeping trailers, I've often gone to get a. You go to this desk, you know, in a tent that manages all the sleeping trailers, and you tell them your O number. If you're an overhead, you get an O number on a fire, and they assign you. Okay, you're in, you know, 1327, and 13, that means 13 trailer, the thir number 13 trailer, and you're in bunk 27. So you open the door to this trailer. Now it's mostly men sleeping in there because that's mostly men on the fires. And you know, they're in the aisle taking their pants off, you know, taking their shirts off, they're standing up, and then they climb into their bunk and then they pull a little curtain. So, but you can't get dressed, you really can't get dressed very well inside or undressed because you can't sit up. There's not enough room in that bunk to sit up. But that bunk, that sleeping trailer is quiet. And the air conditioning is going, so it's going zzz, all night. It's like this white noise. It's cool. It's perfect. It's wonderful. And I love sleeping in the sleeping trailers. People, a lot of people don't like it because you're in there with a bunch of people, and like you're laying in bed, you're just kind of falling asleep, and all of a sudden, there's a foot that shows up right next to your head. Who? Because you gotta step on the bunks in order to get up to your. So if you're up on the top, you've stepped on like three people's bunks to get up to yours, and that means your foot kind of stuck through the curtain, you know, as you walk up. And that's okay. I'm all right with that. It's quiet, it's cool. And so I would, of course,
How's
always
the snoring level?
the snoring level's not bad because that white noise is pretty strong from those coolers. So anyway, that's you know that's a lot of wildland firefighters haven't slept in those because they're not a municipal and they're not Cal Fire, for example. But I've taken advantage of it because I prefer I listen, that's a good night's sleep. And then, but for me, when you get dressed, you know, I just get dressed. I try to scoop my pants on. You know, imagine trying to get dressed. And you can't sit up, you know, you can't sit up all the way. So you gotta kind of, you know, wrestle around with your pants and stuff. But, you know, I didn't want to get dressed in the aisleway with the guys there. But that's another way of sleeping. Still, so far, not the majority. Now here's the next kind of sleeping arrangements we have. So a fire crew, whether it's engines or hand crews or whatever, helicopter crews, they may be working out on the line and it may be a long drive to get back to fire camp. Maybe it's an hour and a half drive because the fires are so big and the fire camps are far away. And for whatever reason, and kind of like I described last week when I talked about the Yellowstone fires, you might be told to spike out. Or you might ask, hey, can we spike out? Because by the time we spend an hour and a half driving back in, it's going to be really late. We're going to be tired. We're on the road more than we really need to be. And then in the morning we got to drive another hour and a half back out here. Can we just spend the night here? And crews love to spike out. That's like a favored way to be on a fire. That way you don't have to go to camp. Camp is crowded, it's dusty, it's noisy. And you don't have time to take a shower every night anyway. You know, most crews, they might take a shower once a week or something. Because it eats into your time for sleep. You got to wait in line to get a shower. It's not like you can just go take a shower like you're going down to your shower down the hallway. You've got to stand in line and wait your turn. So lots of times people just say, you know what, I want to get something to eat. I want to go to bed. So, spiking out is nice. You know, hopefully you got your sleeping bag with you. If you don't, they'll bring you in sleeping bags and they'll bring you food and that sort of thing. And you find a place that's near where you've been working. Maybe it's a half mile away, maybe it's a quarter mile away. Back in the old days, we slept right on the fire line. Back when John and I were fighting fire, you were just happy to find a place that wasn't too rocky where you could lay down. Back in those days, I remember a fire. John and I were not on the same crew this year, but that particular year. But I remember, oh, maybe, yeah, I don't remember if John, if this was one we were on together, John, but I remember the crew boss yelling at everybody to, okay, we're going to take, you know, an hour sleep or 2 hours of sleep. And you know, you're looking around with your headlamp trying to find a spot on the fire line. You're right on the fire line. It's black. You know, the fire just went out, or you know, it's cooled down right next to where you are. And you're looking for a spot in the rocks in the dirt to lay down. And I always said, you know, you sleep with your face in the dirt. And that's really literally how you wake up, and you've got, you know, pebbles and sticks and stuff stuck to your face because that's how you were sleeping. And one time I remember taking my gear off, and I'm going to use my gear for a pillow, which, you know, you're not supposed to use your fire shelter for a pillow, but everybody does because it's like you need something to put your head on. So I remember getting ready to lay down, and I hear everybody laughing, and I lift my head up, looking around, see what everybody's laughing at, and I can see all these headlamps pointed in my direction. And I was like, oh, what's so funny? They're like, you started snoring and your head hadn't even hit the ground yet. And I was like, I'm tired. Leave me alone. And,
That's why you like those sleeping trailers. You're the one who's snoring.
I'm not snoring, but I could. In that case, apparently I was, but it was pretty funny that I was so tired, I started snoring before my head hit the ground. But that's being spiked out, and spiked out means you could have plastic to make little covers. You can make a little campsite where you're spiked out. Then the most common way of sleeping on a fire is when you are in camp. And back in the old days, I say that a lot, but back in the old days, camps weren't that big. And we didn't have all the needs of the electricity because we had generators, and we didn't need all the internet because there was no such thing, or it wasn't being used like it is now. And we didn't need Wi-Fi and all that we need for all of the camp functions that we use today. So in the old days, you'd go to a fire camp and you could drag your gear, your tent, your pack with all of your clothes and all your stuff off into the trees somewhere. And you'd be within 100 yards of camp or 200 yards of camp, and you could still attend all the meetings. You're close to the food, you're close to the showers, to the laundry, but you could be off in the trees. These days, fire camps are not often in those kinds of places anymore. They tend to be in schools before school goes back into session, and they set up the tents like in on the football field. Or maybe they're in a farmer's pasture, and the farmer has just cut his hay, and so the agencies are paying to rent that field. And now the sleeping area is back on the back 40, and you might have, you know, everybody's pretty much got their own tent. So if there's 1,000 people assigned to that fire, there's going to be pretty much 1,000 tents set up. it's not the best way to go camping. You know, it's like it's not just because you're sleeping in a tent, you know, and you bring your sleeping pad, so your sleeping bag is on the pad, and you bring everything you want to be comfortable that you can, that whatever you can fit. But imagine going to sleep at night, and there's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tents around you. Now, this is to me, this is the worst case scenario, because you have people who are snoring, and there is no white noise. There's no white noise to kind of deaden the sound. And you can hear the snoring from tents away, you know. Now, everybody, not everybody, but many, many, many of the tents, great majority of them, look the same. We buy our tents from the same place. You know, they're called a 60-second, we call them 60-second tents. They just pop up and they fit one or two, three people, but we only put, pretty much, we're only putting one person. Some of the crews, they share a tent. So imagine as an operations section chief, a lot of times I was working until 11 o'clock or later at night. So now you're tired. You've been up since 5 in the morning. You've been busy. Now you're not, I'm not digging lines, so I'm not using an axe or a Pulaski or a shovel or any of the tools, but I'm busy, you know, driving to look at something. I'm up in the air in a helicopter talking to folks. I'm running back to camp to make plans for tomorrow, all that sort of thing. You're tired. And you're walking back to finally getting close to midnight. You're walking back to your tent and you're looking around. It's like, damn it, which one is mine? They all look the same. And maybe when you set up your tent, there was no one around you. That's why you went way back to part of a pasture or some part of a field where there's no one. But as the fire goes on, more and more people start showing up. Now you got neighbors right up next to you. And so you hear snoring right next to you, and it feels like it's in your tent. I mean, if you're in your tent and there's a tent a foot away from you, and the guy in there is snoring, I mean, it's like he's in your tent. Well, it gets worse than that. I was coming back to my tent one night. Something happened, and they had to come and get me. They started putting like glow sticks on the tents of the like the ops chief or the incident commanders, so they had to come find you in the night. They knew which tents were yours. So I'm coming back to my tent late at night because some they had something happened. They came and got me for something. I'm going back to my tent. It's probably 2 or 3 in the morning, and they always have the porta potties, you know, the blue little blue porta potties lined up on the edge of sleeping areas so people can go to the bathroom. So someone comes out of the one of the blue porta potties, and you hear the slam of that door. The slam of porta potty doors. It's like in my brain, I will never forget that sound. It's because I've heard it a zillion times. So I hear the door from the porta potty close, and I see some dark figure walking back towards the tent, and I hear the zip zip of the tent. You know, the fly. You open up the tent door, zip of the zipper, and this guy. I see this figure kind of bending down and getting into the tent. And all of a sudden I hear, "What? What? Get out of here! What's going on?" And these guys start yelling. Well, the guy got into the wrong tent. So he was coming back from the porta potty. He gets in some other guy's tent, and the guy he's crawling in, and he's got his hands on some guy who's in there sleeping. And so now he's trying to get out. It's not as easy to get out of the tent, you know, they're not big tents. So he's trying to crawl out and yelling, and the guy who's Hey, he had his hands on. He's yelling, and I'm walking by, like, yeah, this is fire camp, life at fire camp, you know. And so, those are some of the things that happen in fire camp. This is how we sleep. Now, I'm attaching a PowerPoint that shows some slides for those of you who haven't been on fires. It shows you slides of what the fire camps look like. How we feed the folks, how we provide showers and laundry services and things like that. It's not a, it's just a dozen slides or something like that, just pictures. So hopefully that'll give you a better feel for what goes on. And the little story I told you about, a guy getting into the wrong tent, that's not that uncommon. Just imagine it's dark. So it's late at night. So for every story, so if those of you listeners who have been on lots of fires, you've got a million stories of your own. If you would like to add a comment and tell what you've witnessed and what kind of funny things have happened to you in terms of sleeping on fires, whether it's a sleeping trailer, motel, spiked out, sleeping on a tent, whatever it is, or something different, I would love to have and see your story. So just leave a comment so other people can appreciate it too. I'm gonna sign out now, but I hope folks find this interesting. I find that people who don't have involvement in wildland fires are amazed at the complexity of the logistics. And I've never worked in logistics, but I've been a benefactor, a beneficiary of the logistics folks, and I want to appreciate them and give them kudos. And with that, folks, I'm going to sign off and talk to you next week. Thanks very much.